right, so we shouldn't wait more because I really want to cover, hopefully, this topic today so we can do quantum energy teleportation in the next and last lecture. So today we're going to talk about cryptography a little bit. How much do you know about cryptography in general? Have you seen anything before? Was that?
I took a class.
You took a class? So you know quite a bit about cryptography, I would assume. Did they cover BB84?
Yes. Well, no, BB84
is the simplest quantum cryptographic protocol.
It was a classical cryptography class.
Oh, I see. Okay, so summarizing a lot, there are two ways in which we do cryptography. If you want to share secrets with somebody else, all right? That's the notion of cryptography, is the idea of sharing information that only authorized eyes have access to, and nobody else, hopefully. There are two ways in which, and again, summarizing a lot, two families of ways in which we do these things. We have secure cryptography, or real cryptography if you want, and then complexity-based cryptography. Complexity-based cryptography is not secure. It's just not. It's based on the fact that, well, the information is there. I'm sharing the information publicly, and all the information is there for everybody to see. It's just difficult to decode. So that is a complexity-based cryptography. Now, real cryptography would not be based on that. Real cryptography means that anybody who has access to the information that is public will see it as random with zero information content. Now, that's not the way we typically do it. For example, algorithms based on RSA, they are based on the fact that there are mathematical problems that are very easy to go one way, but very difficult to go the inverse way. For example, prime number factorization. So algorithms like RSA are based on the fact that if I give you some factors, it's going to be easy for you to do prime number factorization, but if you have access to no factors, a large number is very difficult to find its prime factors. Now, that's not to say that all cryptography we use is based on that. In fact, a lot of the cryptography we use is very safe against quantum computers. RSA is a little bit of still in use. It's a bit of a relic of the past, in a way. We use different methods. Now, one of the most popular is AES, which is a different method. And also hashing, like for example, cryptocurrencies are typically based on hashing methods. Those are very resilient against quantum attacks as well. It's not to say that quantum computers will not harm them if they appear soon, but the scalability that is required from those fault-tolerant quantum computers to do it, yeah.
If say P were equal to NP, would those ones be safe or not?
No. If P is equal to NP, then would not be safe. But nobody thinks that that's the case. It would be wild if that were the case. It's like P versus NP is a little bit like Riemann's hypothesis. You know, we know it's true, we just don't know the proof. Kind of thing. Again, of course, we always have to give room for the fact that it may not be the case, but the probability is really low. P versus NP. I don't know. Maybe you can tell us something about that.
I would say P is probably not NP, but yeah. BQP.
Oh, that's a different story. That is a different story. Now, the one thing about this is like there's a lot of hype about the fact that quantum computers can factor numbers or prime number can help factor numbers at polynomial time, scaling with the size of the number. That is not to say that quantum computers are going to break cryptography anytime soon. I think we are safe for the next 30 to 40 years, very likely. And when it starts to happen, it's not going to be sudden, it's going to be slow, and people will migrate from the weakest algorithms to the stronger ones. We do know a lot of post-quantum cryptographic algorithms that can easily replace many of the things we use. We know already that quantum computers cannot solve every exponential problem in polynomial time. That's not true. We know already from Grover. Remember, we learned that from Grover. Grover is optimal for search, and search is a polynomial problem, and Grover maps it to a polynomial problem too, with better degree. But that can be used to show that quantum computers cannot map NP problems to P problems, in that sense. Cannot be quantum NP problems. So we know that breaking cryptography, even though there's a lot of hype, it's not going to be as bad. Okay, is that clear? All right, it's not going to be as bad. However, the thing still remains that with a powerful enough computer, classical even, or a powerful enough quantum computer, those methods are threatened because you are actually not keeping the secret. You are sharing all the information. All the information is there, but scrambled. And you need computing power in order to descramble it. So those methods that are based on complexity are not fully secure. Agreed? Now, you are doing now a tutorial on this, right? On the number field shift. That's the best method we know to factor prime numbers. That is extremely efficient, but has one step that is exponential on the size. And that's the step that Shor can do very well, as you are saying in your tutorial, right? So it's not that Shor is a Shor in itself with the quantum advantage, if you want, doesn't come from the quantum computer being able to factor prime numbers, but actually to be able to help this method in doing one step that is not efficient in an efficient way. Make sense? That's what Shor does. All right. So let's talk about the other family of methods. The other family of methods is what I call secure methods, methods in which whoever reads the information that's publicly shared will just find it random, no information content in it. And only you, if you have the right access, the right privilege, can actually access the information. Now, this is, I'm going to give you one case, which is called one-time pad. So what is that? Well, one-time pad is very easy. So you generate a random sequence of numbers as long as the message that you want to transmit. So for example, you have your random key, which is 101. I'm making it up. People are very bad at generating random numbers. You know that? That's been studied. We are horrible. We suck. Okay, you have a key like that, say, imagine, and it's randomly generated. And then you share the key with somebody else that you want to communicate with, and then you have the message. Say the message is 11011000. So one thing that you can do, and you get the message and the key, you can multiply the two. So if you multiply the two, you get a 1, a 0, a 0, a 0, a 1, a 0. I go with that. I'm missing one number. Let's do that one. Sorry, I didn't pile them up properly. 1, 1, 0, 1, 0. 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, for example. You multiply, multiply, you multiply, multiply, you multiply. Okay, so this is the encrypted message. So, if you have a random key and a message, and you multiply the two, the result is random. If you multiply a random number by something that is not random, that is picked, it becomes random. This is out of a distribution. It's got the same probability as the per occurrence of character of having one and zero than the key that is random. Make sense? So this is a random message. You can share it. Nobody knows what this message is unless somebody else. So this is Alice, if you want, trying to send a message. So Alice has a channel that is not secure, shared with Bob. So Alice sends the message to Bob, then Bob receives this message, but Bob has the key as well. Somehow, Alice and Bob met at some point, or share a secure channel, rather. So they have a way to communicate. Maybe they just met and very, very carefully told the key to each other without anybody else listening. And now they have a non-secure channel. They share the encrypted message through the non-secure channel. But they have the key, so because Bob has the key, 10101010, right? Then Bob can multiply the key by the encrypted message, and of course, recover the original message in that. Actually, I'm doing the opposite multiplication. Anyway, so whatever, you can divide, you can multiply. If you share the key, you can undo it by dividing, if you want, which is multiplying again, because it's Boolean logic. Make sense, everybody?
It should be addition.
Huh?
It should be addition.
It's the same thing. Sorry, multiplication and addition. Didn't I add it? I didn't add them. You are right. My bad. Modulo 2 addition. Zero and one. Did I do the arithmetic right? Perfect. So now with the key.
Addition or what? Or just.
bit by bit addition, because if you have one.
This is bit by bit addition, yeah.
Then it will care, but the one would care, okay.
Bit by bit addition, modulo 2, yeah.
Okay.
And then you have the key now, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, and then you do addition again, and then you recover, you do addition again, you see 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, you recover again the message that was originally sent. That makes sense? Everybody? Okay, so you see, this relies on the fact that Alice and Bob share a key. Now, problems with this. You can only use a key once. Why? Because if you use it more than once, this is subjected to something called dictionary attacks. You look for correlations in the message. If you communicate using the same key all the time, somebody can just look at the encrypted message. And yeah, one is random, for sure. But you have two. Yeah, languages tend to have communication. Information is order. You see, information is maximal entropy if it's random. The moment that you're not random, you start getting correlations. And those correlations can be used to find out what the message was. So you cannot really reuse the key many times, or somebody will actually figure out the key. That's what happened with the Nazis, for example. The Nazis were using a system called Enigma to communicate that was based on something like a one-time pad. And the problem is that, well, they were certainly they were vulnerable to such an attack, having correlations, you know, searching for correlations. That was done with the use of computer. Alan Turing participated on those attempts to decipher Enigma, and they succeeded, obviously. It's so funny, because you know the thing that was most helpful for them to decipher Enigma?
This
is the last, actually. The first one, too, sometimes, but the last one was very useful. Yeah, the dates were used, but also the fact that they ended up saying Heil Hitler at the end. And that was used against them, because all the messages ended the same way. Anyway, that's just funny anecdotes. So they are... My arithmetic is irrelevant. I'm sorry, this is a zero. This is a zero. This is a zero. That's fine. Agreed, everybody, now with this? And now we do this, and you get 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0. Yeah, that's a one. And everything else is fine. Sorry for my arithmetic. I always apologize for that. Okay, but you get the idea, no? The idea is that you can use this one time, hence the name. So options that you have, well, share a longer key. Maybe it lasts you some months. See what I mean? You get together and share a longer key, but you'll eventually exhaust it. And then you have to communicate again. So the problem with this method, while it's secure 100%, is that you still need to share a key from time to time. You need to find a secure channel to share a key. That makes sense? Problem is that you cannot really guarantee that you have secure channels. It's very difficult to guarantee that you have a secure channel. And this is where QKD comes in. QKD stands for quantum key distribution. And quantum key distribution is a way to use the quantum mechanics in order to share a key if you do not have a secure channel. So it's kind of nice. You can share a key like this without relying on the existence of a secure channel whatsoever. And that is the big breakthrough of QKD. That makes sense? All right. So we're going to study in particular one protocol called BB84. That is a protocol. This is from cryptography in general. Cryptography names things out of the authors and the year. That's the typical convention. So BB84 was the first protocol for QKD. That's the one we're going to see. Let me tell you that there are more complex ones. Maybe I'll discuss a little bit what are the more complex ones, in a way, or what they bring to the table. But this is the one we're going to see today, okay? Which explains the basic principles of what we're going to do. Any questions? It's kind of cool, no? That you can use quantum tech in order to share a key without relying on a secure channel, which is the difficult part of one-time pad. All right. All right, so for BB84, you have the following resources. Alice and Bob have two choices. So you see right now that, well, we'll see. Alice and Bob will have two choices of bases, right? They have, imagine that they're using polarized light to communicate. Doesn't need to be polarized light. It could be a two-dimensional quantum system and the ability to measure two observables that do not commute, okay? For example, you can think, I don't know, sigma z and sigma x, for example. But let's take polarization of light, for example. Alice and Bob have two choices of bases to measure in, like, and to encode, right? Basically to prepare or to do projective measurements on. One is the vertical horizontal bases, and the other one, let's call it the diagonal anti-diagonal bases. And basically, they are related like this, right? It's a Hadamard relation between them, okay? Now, of course, Alice and Bob, this is the encoding legend, if you want. So Alice and Bob encode, so Alice, for example, encodes messages. Like if C's got a 1, C would prepare a V if C's using the vertical horizontal basis. And a 0, if C's got a 0, will prepare an H state if he's using the vertical horizontal basis. And if C's using the diagonal anti-diagonal basis, C will prepare a 1 with the anti-diagonal and a 0 with the diagonal. And Bob the same. When Bob reads out, if Bob measures in these bases, if he measures a V, it's a 1, measures an H, it's a 0. If it measures in these bases, if he measures an A, it's a 1. If he measures a D, it's a 0. You can tell already that the resource, the common resource they need here to share is a common reference frame. Make sense? They need to share a reference frame to know which one is the one that's tilted 45 degrees. Not all the protocols require that. Some of them, they all require some resource. The resource that we require here is the shared reference frame. Make sense? Because, you know, most of, as we will see, these protocols are fully secure, but the attacks comes from ways around the protocol, right? The attacks to those protocols, the typical attacks, come from people being clever about how they implement them. For example, you can be fooled into sharing a reference frame, maybe you don't share it, you know? You can fool each other like that. Anyway, but let's assume that they do share a reference frame. It's not that difficult to share a reference frame most of the time. Okay? All right, so if they share a reference frame, I'm going to give you the steps of the protocol, and then we're going to see it work, and then we're going to see it being attacked, and see what happens when the protocol is attacked.
Wait, how is it easy to share the reference frame?
Get a gyroscope, call it GPS maybe, get a North Star and another star. You know, there are reference points that you can use to set a reference frame.
Shouldn't you communicate that we're working in this basis?
What's that?
Shouldn't Alice and Bob communicate to see if they're working in
this? Oh, yeah, but yeah, for sure, but not communicate. This is the common understanding of them, for sure. But the resources in terms of what physical resources they need is a common reference. When they decide on this strategy, you say, of course, they have to communicate and agree on the method that they're going to use. Otherwise, there's no point on doing this, right? But once they do, they also need a common reference frame, which is a physical object that you need. Okay, make sense? You can use distant stars. You can use, if you trust GPS, maybe you shouldn't trust GPS. You can use the gravity of Earth and some other reference, you know. There are ways of getting a common reference frame. It's a classical reference frame, so it's not that difficult to get. Make sense? All right. So let's take the steps of the protocol. One. Alice generates a key. So some random number. 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. So that's the key that Alice wants to share with Bob. Make sense? And nobody else but Bob. So 2. Alice generates, that's not working well, sorry, a sequence of bases. For example, that's another random sequence. Let's see, cross x plus plus x plus plus x plus x. And then 3. Alice encodes information. And say, for example, Well, I'm going to write in the quantum channel. What is the quantum channel here? States that C prepares and sends to Bob. So they have to share a quantum channel. Okay? Say, for example, a fiber optic, so it sends pulses of light with some polarization. Make sense? So in this case, it would be, okay, let's see. A 1 in the plus basis would be a V. So this is a V. So it has to prepare a state V and send it through the optical fiber. Make sense? Next one, a 0 in the cross basis, that's a D. A 1 in the plus basis, that's a V. A 0 in the plus basis, that's an H. A 1 in the X basis is an A. And so on and so forth. So let's say V, D, V, H, A, V, H, A, V, H, D, V, A, if I did it right when I did it on my own. Make sense? So Alice has prepared the V state and then send it through the optical fiber, the D state and send it to the optical fiber, then the H state, send it to the optical fiber, etc. Make sense? And Bob's receives it. The quantum channel nothing here is assumed to be secure. Nothing. Nothing here is assumed to be secure. An attacker could have access to both. They're going to share a classical channel and a quantum channel. And the quantum channel is definitely not secure. Or the classical channel either. Nothing is assumed about the security of those channels. All right, then number 4. Bob receives the quantum info, and by that I mean that he receives the states sent through the channel, and decides randomly on what basis or in what basis to measure. Okay, so Bob is going to make a decision now in what basis to measure the light that comes randomly. So Bob goes, doesn't have to be random, but let's say randomly. Bob goes and says, I'm going to measure on the plus X, X, plus X, X, plus, for example. All right? And then Bob measures the states of light. The first pulse of light, notice that I don't like to say photon, so I avoid that. The first pulse of light in the plus basis, the second pulse of light on the plus basis, the third pulse of light on the X basis, and so on. So that means that sometimes he would have chosen right, each of them with a probability of 50%. Sometimes he would have chosen wrong. So let's see, let's write in a different color. I'm going to use green for those that are right. How about that? And then white for those that are wrong, because I will reserve the red for something else. Okay. So the first time, that's nice. The basis is the right one. So he it's a V, right? And that means that he gets a 1. That one is correct. Agreed? Second, well, he chose the wrong basis. So it's a coin toss, what he would get for that number, right? 50% right, 50% wrong. Agreed? So let's say that he gets a 1, just to say, for example. Okay? Third one, plus and cross. Oh, he got the wrong. Got the wrong basis for that one. Let's say that it measures also a 1. Oh, I wrote green here. Then this one is the wrong basis, but say that he measures a 1 as well. I think the green and the white are not really distinguishable much, are they? I'll use orange for the wrong ones. I thought the green would be more green. All right, so the third one is the, I already said third one, the fourth one is a plus. Oh, that's the right basis. Is the right basis, and he gets the message right. It's a 0, it's the horizontal. Maybe I should be doing this, right? So we connect them.
So is wrong?
Wrong choice of basis.
But the first one is correct.
Yeah.
Oh, orange is correct, sorry.
Oh, okay.
It was supposed to be green. The orange throws me off. All right. So this is wrong basis as well. And the X is the wrong basis. So white is wrong, orange is right. How about that? Okay. Fourth one is the right basis. So it's an H, therefore it's a zero. And this is correct. And this is a one, that is also correct. Then the next one is incorrect, different basis. So let's say he gets a zero. I'm just tossing the coin every time that is incorrect, 50-50. Then the next two are correct, so two zeros. And the last two are incorrect. So let's say he gets a zero and a one. Make sense? So the orange one corresponds to, actually, Bob chose the wrong basis, not the same as Alice. And the white ones are, yeah, he chose the right basis, the same as Alice. Make sense? Per each one of them is 50-50. So you would expect the expectation value. What's that?
Okay, yeah, it's just arithmetic.
But it's working, no?
No, I'm just saying, I think some of the X's are 1, 2, 3. The fifth one, for example.
All right.
Orange was correct or was wrong?
Orange is correct.
Okay.
White is wrong. Hopefully that helps. The last one is wrong. So orange is correct, why is one wrong? Yeah, so these two are wrong, these two are correct, these two are correct, this one is correct. Now you see that you get about expectation value of 50% of the bits right. 50% of the times you actually chose right, okay? So, step number five. Bob calls Alice. And by that, I mean they use a classical channel to communicate. And Alice posts. This could be a post on Reddit, too. Alice could post on Reddit this information. This has to be, could be publicly announced. There's no problem. Alice posts the basis, the choice of basis she used. Okay, and then Bob discards the wrong choices. Okay, so Bob is like, oh, Alice posts, I've done plus X plus plus X plus plus X plus X. And then Bob says, all right, so I was wrong on the second, the third, on the six and the last two. So Bob says to Alice, all right, I got the first right, I got the fourth and the fifth and so on, right? And then they say, he tells Alice. So the shared key in the end is 10100. That's the shared key. They have thrown out all the rest. Make sense? All right, so let's see that we understand it, right? Alice generates a key. It could be n numbers long, if you want. They generate a sequence of measurements. Then, measurements, preparation in this case. And then Alice sends light, preparing those bases on eigenstates associated with either VH or AD. And then Bob makes a random decision or an arbitrary decision on what bases to measure on, and then obtains results. And then they both communicate and discard the errors. And they kept the ones that they were in common.
Called Bob first, post mm-hmm. first, and then so everything would be right.
Say again?
Why would Alice not post the choice of basis first and then Bob measure?
Okay, because that would be a different protocol. We haven't seen this. So this protocol is understood, right?
Yeah, but why would they? I mean,
because you'll see when we have an attacker that if you were to do that, you are completely vulnerable. Okay. So with that choice, you don't have a cryptography protocol. You'll see. I mean, we'll see it when we attack it. Because the attack relies, so the security of this relies that on you being able to detect an attacker. If the attacker knows what to do to fool you, which is if you give that information first, you're giving the attacker what to do to fool Bob into I'm not here. You'll see. Yeah. That would be a bad protocol. It would not be a good protocol. Make sense, everybody?
So do they generally make, like, would Alice generally generate a really, really long key so
yeah.
that the shared key could be long enough for...
Yeah. Alice has no limit in how long the number should be.
Uh-huh.
And it's the expectation value is going to be 50% as long. The shared key, you know, is 50 per numbers, 50% per number. So the expectation value is, look at that. You have a key that is half as long. Make sense? All right. So the protocol is clear, hopefully. That's a protocol that gives you a shared key. Now we have to see if the protocol is vulnerable. Let's assume that we have an attacker that has access to everything here. The attacker knows the common reference frames, the reference frame that they share. The attacker can pirate the classical channel, and the attacker can intercept the quantum channel too. So the attacker has full access. It's a powerful attacker here. That's Eve.
Okay, so in that case, of course, that doesn't work.
Right, makes sense? So you always have to put yourself in the worst case scenario for cryptography, that nothing that you do is secure. Makes sense? All right. So let's have, let's see what happens in a scenario where we have an attacker. The attacker Eve is in between Alice and Bob intercepting. Well, of course, it sees the information that is posted by Alice, so intercepts the classical channel, but also intercepts the quantum channel. It taps the optical fiber and can measure and prepare things on the optical fiber. Okay? All right, so Alice, we have here the message, the key, that Alice generated. And the choice of bases, the same one. Let's write it like plus x plus plus x plus plus x plus x. Okay, that's the basis that she used to prepare. And of course, here we have the sent message, which is v, the quantum message if you want, the quantum state that she sends, h, a, v, h, b, v, a. All right, so far is the same as here. But now let's have an attacker. Now the attacker, because the attacker doesn't know, I'm going to use red. Okay, I'm going to use red here for every time Eve chooses the wrong basis. The attacker doesn't, because you haven't told Eve, right? The attacker doesn't know what basis you used to prepare. That was your choice as Alice, locally. And that's going to be the key, right? And sometimes the attacker is going to choose the right basis. Sometimes it's not going to choose the right basis to measure. So the attacker has on red D, for example. Then let's do DV. Let's do A. The basis. Sorry, not the measurement. My bad. So I'm going to write this in white is when there's a mistake, of course. We have here x, x, plus, x, x, plus, x, plus, 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 for example. That's the choice of Eve, as an example. And then Eve measures. And every time that he measures in the wrong basis, let's say, let's put it in red. So we have D. Here another D. Here a V. And A, and A, and a B, and a D, and H, and a V, and an H. So right when he gets when he when on when she, if it's typically a she, when she measures the on the right basis, of course she obtains the same quantum result, if you want, as result of the measurement Alice actually sent, was meaning to send. When it's the wrong basis, well, it's a coin toss, okay? Make sense? So I just chose some values for those cases, but of course could have been the others. So the point is, I'm missing one. This is not both bases. This is Eve's measurements. And this would be both bases, right? And this is both measurements. And this is Bob's key. Sorry, I just missed one box. All right, so the key of this is that Eve, by measuring, is going to have to alter the state. There's no way to not. Maybe Eve is absorbing the photon and re-emitting another one exactly what Eve measured, for example. That's one way of doing it. Or is doing a projective measurement on the photon and letting it go. There's no way to extract full information about what's sent without altering the state of the polarization of the light sent. That's what this relies on. So now, let's take the bases that Bob used, the same one as here. So Bob chooses some random bases. Let's say it's the same one as before. Plus, plus, x, plus, x, x, plus, x, x, plus. And let's see what Bob measures. So Bob measures on this one. Bob's this was an x basis here. So there's a coin toss now, this one. So let's say that Bob measures an h, for example. All right, then this one. So wait, Bob is.
Why did you compare Bob's basis with Eve's? You should have compared it with Alice's.
Not really, no. Because you see, when Eve measures, Eve projects. So the photon that is arriving to Bob is the D, it's a D state. So even though Bob actually made the right choice, as compared to Alice, it's a coin toss. And now I'm deciding it's an H, but it could have been a V. See what I mean?
Yeah.
It's random. All right. So let's say here. Here, again, here is the wrong basis. So this one's going to be wrong. It's a B. Maybe I'll do, that's fine. I just do all white here because there's no point. It's a V. This one, because again, it's a coin toss, right? For this one, it's a plus. It arrives on the X, so it's a coin toss again. For this one, we have an A. For example, it's measured on the X, which is different from the basis, so another coin toss. For this one, it's a coin toss because Eve projected on the cross basis, so let's say it's a V. This one doesn't have a choice, it's measured on the same basis as everybody, so this one is certainly an A. The next one, it's going to be a coin toss again, so let's say it's a D. Then this one, it's another coin toss because Eve is measuring on the X basis, so this one is a coin toss. So let's say we have H, V, A, V, A, V, say it's a V, for example. Now this one, another coin toss. This one's going to be a D, say, for example. This one, another coin toss, say it's a D. And this one doesn't have a choice. This one is the same basis as the eavesdropper, so it has to be an H. Make sense, everybody?
Sorry, wasn't H and A the fifth one and the last one correct? So orange?
I'm not using any colors for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not? Okay.
We will do that. We will identify now. All right. So now Bob generates a key. And the key is basically from this decoding now, right? From that measurements that you have. So that would be, let me write it here. And I'm going to write the ones that are right. And by right, I mean, I'm going to write first what it is, and then we'll point them out, because the colors are not doing us any favor, because I don't see much contrast between the color white and the color red either. So let's just point them out with circles and squares. So zero, I'm pretty sure that people at home cannot see those colors. I'm pretty sure, because the color resolution of those cameras at that distance is going to be super tiny. So anyway, I don't know, maybe they do. Maybe there's a great camera. 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. That's what he decodes. Agreed? All right, so let's see. Same as before. he has to, so they now communicate, Alice and Bob communicate, right? And do the same thing. Alice posts what bases she actually measured in, and they discard the ones that they didn't coincide. They had the same basis. So they have to discard the first, the third. So this one, they discard. Let me just cross it out. This one is discarded. The second is kept. The next one is kept. This one is discarded. The next one is discarded. This one is kept. The next two are discarded. And the last two are kept.
Wait,
agreed?
Aren't they discarding them based off of what basis they measured?
That's right. So
yeah.
This one
measured in plus.
Oh, this one is not discarded. I did the opposite. My bad.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I took oranges wrong. As I told you, I wouldn't. Sorry about that. 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0. My bad. So they keep the first, they discard the second, the third, and then they keep the next two, then discard the next one, then keep the next two, and then discard the last two. All right, my bad. Make sense? Now, Alice key, when they discard, it's gonna be 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, same as before. But Bob's key, it's gonna be different. Bob's key now is 0, 1, 1, 1, 0. Agreed?
Yeah.
They believe they may have the same key, but they don't. So what they do next, step 6. Bob tells Alice, half, for example, or some part of his key. So, and then this part, for example, say that they exchange, Bob communicates to the first two bits of the key and starts communicating one. And Bob said, okay, the first one is a 0. Alice said, oh, hold on. The first one is a 1. That is incorrect. The channel's compromised. Let's stop communication. Let's not do anything. See what I mean? So the action of Eve, assuming everything's ideal, of course, we will talk about when it's not, but the action of Eve, what it's doing, is allowing Alice and Bob to detect that channels have been compromised. That makes sense? So that's the power of BB84. The ability to now detect that the action, of course, this is probabilistic. Maybe you have a very lucky Eve, but what is the probability of going undetected? Can somebody tell me the probability of going undetected?
It depends on the length.
To the power of the key's length over 2.
What is the probability of Eve being undetected in 1 bit?
1. I mean, 2 to the power of 1.
Okay. It's not 1 over 2 either.
1/4.
No, it's not 1/4.
What is it?
Because Eve has two choices. Let's do a tree. Why don't we do a tree? So Eve. What? Yeah. Eve has two choices. Basis 1, so let's call the basis 1 the cross basis and the plus basis. So, and then it's a probability of measuring 1 or 0 in the encoding, right, if you want, and then 1 on 0. If Eve chooses the right basis, it's always fine, undetectable. So that is 1/2 probability of this happening, 1/2 probability of, sorry, 1/4 probability of this happening. And in mind that this is the correct one, let's say correct basis, incorrect. So 1/4 of that, and then incorrect. If it's the incorrect basis, still Eve has 50% chance of getting it right. So this one would be another 1/4, and this another 1/4. So probability of going undetected is 3/4 to the power of the number of shared bits of the key. Agreed? Now, if they share, for example, 5, I can't tell you what it is, right? So for n equals, say that it's 10, for example. Imagine that n is equal to 10. So of the key that you have, you share 10 bits to check with Alice.
Yes.
Then the probability is 3/4 to the power of 10, which is 0.056. So very low probability of not being detected, of course. And as you can tell, it's exponential. Where is it? I didn't write it. Probability of non-detection is 3 over 4 to the power of n, where n is the number of shared bits in the key. And as you can tell, it goes exponentially to 0. Agreed? So it's a very secure protocol. If you share, say, instead of 5 or 10, you share a million bits, it's impossible for if to not be detected.
Number.
Make sense?
Sure.
OK. Now, what time is it? OK, very good. Is this clear how the protocol works in ideal conditions? Mm-hmm. All right, hold on. So again, the protocol, what it does is guarantees that you can share a key in a secret way. Basically gives you a way to check if you actually share it secretly. Now, this protocol, or similars, are far from just a theoretical realization. It's commercially available now. Banks use it. Governments use it. It's in use right now. In fact, at the IQC, you can see them, the commercial units and the ones that are homebrewed there, at the IQC at the University of Waterloo. And you have a unit that's called Alice, and that's called Bob. And you can communicate with this. These things are, there are many companies that sell it. This is already there. Now, back to, it was your proposal, right? Imagine the ethical scenario that you were considering, the quantum ethics scenario. It was you that said, oh, maybe you can do a keyword search, and it's, you cannot.
Right.
Not even you controlling the thing can decode the information. That's the key point, right? When you offer a cryptography service, you better don't have access to the secrets. You don't. You have no clue what the secrets are. There's no way. You are providing this. You are providing this service for people, but you have no access whatsoever to the information. So you cannot know who they are. Well, maybe you can ask them to identify themselves or whatever, but you have to trust them, right, in a way. You definitely have the logs of when they did it, how often, and so on, but you don't know the information at all. You have nothing about the information. It's impossible for you. That's the point of it, right? That makes sense? All right, so this, again, is technology that is available already, and people use it. Now, of course, this is a very idealized scenario. In reality, often, your polarization would not be well prepared, or your sensor will have a dark count. It will tell you click when there's nothing sent, or it will not detect some light, because photodetectors are not really super efficient. See what I mean? Like, above all, when you send a small amount of light, right? Here's an interesting thing. At the IQC, there was a group. It's no longer there. But there was a group that was called the Quantum Hacking Group. And that group was about getting commercial systems like this and hack them based on assumptions of ideality that are not there, or poor software or hardware that they use around the quantum part of the system. The quantum part is perfect, but then inefficiencies and so on happen. Now, there are modifications of this protocol taking into account everything. For example, this protocol is very robust to the coherence. And the fact that suddenly, well, you're preparing one basis, but you have noise. And you have classical noise that creates, instead of sending pure states, you have mixed states, right? With some probability of having flipped and so on. This is very, very resilient to that. You can compensate by sending more, a longer key. So that's fine. There are other protocols that use different resources. So this one is, of course, the one that requires you to share a reference frame. There are others. There's Ecker 91. Ecker is the name of the person, Arthur Ecker. Ecker 91 is, instead of using a shared reference frame, uses entanglement. So basically, you have entangled light, and you send entangled light through the quantum channel. And it substitutes the reference frame with entanglement as a resource. What else? There's one called SARG 0204, right? That one is... is QKD based on coherent light pulses. Instead of sending polarization states, you send coherent light pulses and you encode it in the coherent amplitude. What else? There's CVQKD, which is continuous variables. It's really great. That's the one that is very resilient to errors in the measurement. It's actually encoding with position degrees of freedom and momentum degrees of freedom. What else? MDI, yeah. MDI QKD is kind of cool because it's actually, MDI is, what that means is measure device independent. It's not assuming that you're able to measure particular things, and therefore it's not assuming reference frames either. So it's basically, you do always the same measurements, and the same measurements here without relying on each other. So it uses, again, the correlations as a resource for it. But in any case, the principle is very similar. The principle behind all of them is that you are able to detect an eavesdropper because by the mere virtue of the eavesdropper obtaining information in the quantum channel, it's sending you signals that is eavesdropping. And always the probability of detection goes to zero exponentially with the length of the chain. Any questions about this? No questions? That's super clear, I hope.
Wait, so something like this. This is something that could it or could not be broken by, say, some algorithm that's...
Cannot. There's no way to break it. No.
Okay.
This is unbreakable.
Okay, so...
It's unbreakable as long as you have a good implementation, see? Now, you have, I don't know, one way to hack it. Alice and Bob have screens that tell you the ones and the zeros. You use the camera in the room that is looking at the screen to get the ones and the zeros. It's broken. See what I mean? Or the circuits, or it's using electronics that is sending the information about the measurement, then it's broken. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways around it, but they're not based on the quantum mechanics. The quantum mechanics part and the theory part is unbreakable. The theory is secure. However, the implementation may be crappy and therefore attackable, right? So implementing it right is good.
So do you think people should switch to this versus using, you know, like the prime number thing?
No, that's a good question. Yes and no. For some applications, yes. Like if really you can establish, the problem with this is that you need to establish secure channels between many parties, right? The nice thing about the prime number part, the complexity base, cryptography is nice because you can broadcast information always and you don't need to share channels one to one. You see what I mean? Everything is public communication here. A quantum channel is classical information you can copy and distribute. Quantum information you can't. You have the no cloning theorem preventing you from sending this to everybody. See what I mean? So it's not going to work. You need a quantum channel between two parties for something like this. So that's nice, as long as there's only two parties or it's pair-to-pair communication. It's not the most convenient, cost-effective way of communicating. It's going to be difficult for you on your phone to do that, you know, to have a secure quantum channel with something else. So it's going to replace communication between institutions. They can have boxes, you know, that do it. Banks, you know, with each other will use it. Companies with each other, Google would use it for internal communication, you know, to avoid leaking information. Governments will use it for sure. People, organizations will use it. Now, again, for you to have it on your phone, that's very difficult because now you need to have a quantum channel on your phone. And those things are tough. How are you going to establish a quantum channel? See what I mean?
But so can banks use it to keep your credit card information safe? So like say...
Yeah, you can have a box at home
where
you actually input your credit card when you want to use it. Sure, and you can use this for that.
Okay.
But you cannot carry it with you. That's the point.
Yeah.
At least not that I can think of. Maybe there are ways that somebody comes up with, right? But not that I can think of. So I think the future, though, of secure communication, as in mobile secure communication, is going to be post-quantum algorithms. Algorithms that are safe against attacking from quantum computers, which they exist classically. See, this technology is great because this is guaranteed to be secure. None of those are guaranteed to be secure. By those, I mean the ones relying on complexity. Those with enough computing power, even classically, I'll break them. See what I mean? But they're very secure because the computing power that you need is out of reach for humans at the moment, right? So I think that will definitely be the way we go. We just find ones, some of those that are not vulnerable to quantum algorithms solving the problem easily. I think that's the future. Now, it's a really neat question. Maybe we can discuss that now because the next thing that I have is quantum energy teleportation. And I'll save that for Friday. There's no point in starting now, 3 minutes before the time. But thinking about how would quantum technologies be implemented? Well, you see, the most likely quantum technologies that you will have available soon, and by soon I mean in the next decade, something like 5 years or so, is noise intermediate quantum devices, right? Devices that are not universal quantum computers, but they can run optimization algorithms really well. You got some of that in the quantum ethics session. Now, those devices will exist, indeed, in a short term. And probably they will be incorporated in consumer electronics eventually, in some time. The way it would work, you probably have a company that has, well, like IBM now, the IBM computer now, right? One of the things that you have to do, by the way, is, have you been given the homework yet? The next one?
Not the second one.
No? Little spoiler. You're going to have to do Grover's algorithm in the IBM quantum computer. So that's publicly available. So you will have probably the first application of those devices in consumer electronics would be to power machine learning. The optimization part of machine learning much more efficiently. So when you need it, you basically use cloud resources that do quantum computing, like noise intermediate quantum computing. And you use the optimization. So you send the optimization problem to the cloud and solves it for you and sends it back. And that will be powering anything related to machine learning is going to benefit a lot from those devices as well. Because machine learning relies on two things, right? An optimization problem and linear algebra. And the difficult part is the optimization problem. And the optimization problem, we have quantum algorithms that will do them very well. So yeah, what it's called now, the field is called quantum machine learning in general, which is anything quantum and machine learning together is called quantum machine learning. So now many things go under the name quantum machine learning. But I think that will be the first consumer electronics application. Before that one, of course, well, some of the ones that John actually mentioned in the talk. So yeah, you won't have, I don't want to be Lord Kelvin here. Poor Lord Kelvin made some statements that are really misquoted many times, but it's a fun misquote, so I will say it still. They were not correlative one after the other, and they were not said in the form I'm going to say them, but they're often misquoted like that. It's difficult to predict the future. So Lord Kelvin said three things. It was, the Rengen rays will end up being a fluke. Rengen ray was X-rays. Marconi's radio has no future whatsoever. And heavier than air flying machines are utterly impossible. It's not true. He didn't say that. He did, but not in that form. He did, and he had good reasons for each of them. X-rays are weird to understand if you don't have quantum mechanics to understand them. So it makes sense that he was skeptical about them. Marconi's radio, imagine this. Yeah, telegraphs work, but imagine trying to use electromagnetic waves to communicate. How many people communicate in the world? So many. That's going to be so much interference. How are you going to discern the signals? It makes total sense, right? How are you going to be able to tell it's you or me both are using radio? There's no way. It's too noisy to do that. Of course, I mean, you need to know. There's a lot of math that you need to use to understand frequency and amplitude modulation and include your carrier signals. And then it's not the carrier signal that has the information. It's whatever you do with the perturbations to that signal, right? That's difficult. Heavier than air, fly machines. So yeah, sure, there are birds. Fine. You can say birds fly, so why not? But here's the thing. You look at Navier-Stokes, and this thing is nonlinear as crazy. Like, it's crazy nonlinear. There's going to be a lot of instabilities. Are you going to be able to control flight? Sure, with a bird brain, maybe you can do it. But with math, like it's really modeling that math, there's no way. Well, of course, it's reasonable. You see what I mean? It's not stupid, what he said. But they were all utterly wrong, and they were proven wrong like within like years of when he said them. So yeah, I don't want to say that you won't have this in your phone like Kelvin did. But I find it very unlikely that you could establish a quantum channel from your phone to anywhere else. Maybe there are ways. Maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know. I mean, maybe in the future we will be all super powerful. You know, the best way to communicate is gravitational waves, for example. Maybe you can create a really quantum excitation of the gravitational field and then send it and communicate. I don't know. I don't want to say no.
Would you need a really massive thing to do that? Or
we need it now. Yeesh. But maybe, as you see, for example, for Marconi's radio, we needed antennas. And now you have antennas in here on your phones that are way more powerful. You see, well, actually less powerful in the sense of wattage that they need, but way more clever in how they send the signals with low power. So I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't want to be Lord Kelvin. But yeah, that's the thing, right? Maybe that's why we don't see. You know that people look at the stars and says, there aren't many civilizations. There aren't many civilizations out there because we don't see electromagnetic emissions and so on. But maybe that's the primitive way of saying hello. Maybe they don't communicate through the electromagnetic spectrum. Maybe they would come here and tell us, you're using the electromagnetic spectrum to communicate? Jesus. You know, something like that. Like, come on. And this thing cannot even go through walls that are metallic or something. Use gravitational waves. That goes through everything, you know? or neutrinos. Who knows? I mean, no, I have no idea. Maybe there's no civilizations out there. I don't know. But you see what I mean, right? It's difficult to make predictions and not be right. Okay, so this is the end of cryptography. Next time we meet for QET, hopefully that will be fun. We're going to do the minimal QET model. We're going to do QET with two qubits. And then we're going to discuss, hopefully, the implications. And then we'll book, now that we have time, because I predict that QET won't have any time after that, because it's going to be pretty tight.